You're listening to Pretty Much Pop, a culture podcast, a scrappy bunch of A-Wing pilots without our own TV show. Today we're turning to Star Wars in light of the new Mandalorian and Grogu film and the various cartoons released on Disney+. This is Mark Lintzenmeyer, or you can call me Moaunadon, but do not call me Hammerhead, that is highly offensive.
This is Al Baker, and if I was the lead in this movie, I wouldn't want to show my face either.
Ooh. I'm Sarah Lynn Bruck, and a cute summer movie this is.
This is Lawrence Ware. Does anyone know why Anakin crossed the road? Anybody know? Anybody know? To get to the dark side.
Oh, good.
Does that rise to a level of dad joke? I think it does. I think
it is.
Think
no, it's definitely.
Oh, 100%.
It's definitely
that's
a dad
what
joke.
That is.
100%.
You're right there in the pocket, Lawrence.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah.
I think we could have a whole episode on what a dad joke is.
Well, like much like Star Wars, dad jokes are all about family, and that's what makes them so powerful. Sorry, that's a meme, not a sincere.
That sounds like it should be more about like the Fast and Furious movies, not necessarily Star Wars.
That's also about family.
Did you feel like with this movie, like you were crawling around and somebody had some fish hanging up and you're trying to steal a fish, and then they're like, hey, I know you're trying to steal a fish. Why don't you just, here's a fish. That's the metaphor. I don't know what it means.
I think that was the plot of the entire movie is this thing should be hard, but it wasn't hard. There's absolutely no stakes here. Moving on.
I bet I used that Hammerhead joke in one of my previous intros, but it was my favorite.
I'm sorry. I'm still really confused about that metaphor you just came up with, Mark. Were you referencing something that I should know, or was I supposed to be able to make sense of that?
Yeah, I'm not getting it either. I'm not getting
it. It was in the film where Grogu was like, oh, they okay. just threw in this random alien who had fish.
Oh, yes, I remember that guy.
It was just a random thing that was in this sort of random movie. Which I'll just, it seems like you guys are going to crap all over it. I was fine with this movie.
No, I'm not going to crap over it. I'm not going to crap all over it.
I'm going to crap over it a bit.
What we're expecting out of our Star Wars, right? That Lucas said, I want to make something that's just like a dumb little thing. Like I watched when I was a kid, made my cereals with a lot of cool stuff in it. It's got to have cool robots and cool fights and make me want to know what's going to happen next. And I think that did it for me. I thought this was a breezy summer movie aimed mostly at kids. Kids like violent stuff.
Yeah,
mostly at kids.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's one of the kind of question marks I have over this movie, because yeah, it is clear, like for kids, family movie. But at some points I was kind of disturbed at what they decided was appropriate to put on screen in a movie that was marketed on the basis of the most sellable toy since the Minions.
Yeah, I mean, I've read the reviews. They're mixed, but it seems like audiences generally like it. It's just, it's not the event that we expected out of Star Wars. You know,
that's right.
Oh, but some of those events were bad and they were weighted down by expectation and got to make it a 3-hour movie because we have to have all the stuff wrap up. Like, no, let's just have an episode and these could come out regularly, but it does make it. I saw one review was just like, well, it's just another franchise now. Like, and was this any better than an average Marvel thing? Like, I don't know.
Sorry, Mark, but I think we're going to have to talk about a little bit of the business, Hollywood business.
Sure.
When we're talking about this movie, because when I was watching this movie and I thought it was fine. I thought it was just fine. It was cute. I think kids will probably like it. Grogu is adorable. And I thought it was fun, you know, but it was kind of a nothing burger. I'll probably forget about this movie. I think I probably already did. But I was just thinking, what does it do to the brand, the Star Wars brand? Because you're right. Star Wars used to be an event movie. This is something that you could bring the entire family to. We would all get something out of it. And I just felt like this story was so watered down. It looked, I am like the thousand person who noticed this, is that it looked like the TV show. It was like a couple of episodes slapped together.
Hard disagree on that point.
But
keep going.
But anyway, but I was wondering, why would we leave the house to go and see this when we could just watch it on Disney Plus? I don't know. I'm not shitting on this movie totally, but I definitely felt like, what has Star Wars become? Because if it's become this, then it's not special anymore.
Lawrence, did you go to IMAX or something?
Went to IMAX. I've seen it three times. Two times with two different kids. one time with like a group of kids. And listen, this movie plays with kids. Kids love it. They just do. They just do. I mean, I don't know how deep you want to get into the business of this, because honestly, this feels like the last vestiges of Kathleen Kennedy. And then next year, we're going to get a Starfighter movie with Ryan Gosling, which is going to be the real reset. This is a fine movie. Is it great? No. Did I expect it to be great? No. Is it fun? Yes. Does it give me action? Yes. Does it give me cute things? Yes. Now, the reason why I disagree with you, Sarah, is because it's clear that they had more money with this film, because Grogu was like walking. Like, he was walking around and doing little things, and there was like puppetry that was happening, practical puppetry. And I was happy to see it. You know, they definitely had more money to play with. The visuals look so much better than the TV show. Was it episodic? Yes. Like it felt like four episodes kind of put together. So it's very much an episodic kind of thing. Is it a great movie? No, but here's the thing. When it comes to Star Wars, I am not in the bag of it, but I've come to the realization that Star Wars is first and primary now a kid's property. It is not for adults. It is not for us. If we get something out of it, great, but it's really not aimed at us, not anymore. Now, we'll see with the Starfighter film, but it's not aimed at us. And so this was a film that was far more violent than it needed to be, but it was aimed at kids. It worked for kids. It did what it needed to do. And I'm perfectly fine with it. Now, would I defend it? No. Is it a great film? No. Are the visuals spectacular? No. It was an event, kind of, for the kids. It was. For us, probably not, because we're like, yo, we can sit at home and watch this. But I think streaming has kind of ruined us, and it's made us where we're like making the calculation, should I go to the movies to watch this or just wait for streaming? And I think part of the reason why earlier Star Wars films were such an event was because you had to go to the movies to watch them. And they kind of transitioned away from film properties to television properties for good and ill. I mean, I think the Obi-Wan television show was abysmal, and they kind of messed up the brand a little bit. I think they're trying to recalibrate with the next film, but this film was fine. It worked for the kids. It did what I wanted to do. Do I love it? No. But I haven't really loved a Star Wars film since The Last Jedi. I think that was the last one that I loved, because I think The Rise of Skywalker was terrible. But I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. Al, go ahead and shit.
Yeah.
Start the shit party.
So I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed, really. So
you sound like my mother. You sound like my mother when I was growing up.
So the reason I'm disappointed is because I weirdly had never seen the Mandalorian TV show before prepping for this podcast. I've been saving it up as a little treat for myself because I knew that it had a good reputation. So this was my reason to watch it. And I watched it in the first season. Is amazing. Everybody knows this. It's a fantastic season of TV. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the second season, everybody also knows, devolves into fan service, which gets a bit silly and uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. The third season, I stopped watching halfway through because it lost my interest. And I imagine that that's kind of a similar experience that most people had. So firstly, I had high expectations of the Mandalorian movie because I'd just seen the show, and I knew from the first season of the show that this is a formula that could really work if it's done very well. And that's the first reason I was disappointed, because I was fresh off the first season, which is a terrific piece of Star Wars storytelling, along with Andor, probably the best thing in the kind of new era of Star Wars that I've seen. The movie was bad, I think is really bad in a lot of ways. And I think the reasons that it's bad, interestingly, mirror the decline of the TV show. Because in the first season, you just have this cool idea. We've got a Western with a cute baby character in space. It's all very Star Wars-y. There's a character that looks like Boba Fett in it. We're off to the races. It's a really good time. Then the second series, everybody realizes that, oh my God, Grogu is the most popular thing Star Wars has produced since BB-8. So the second series becomes a lot more about Grogu doing cute stuff. It becomes a lot more about fan service. So they listen too much. This is my thesis for The Mandalorian. They listen too much and over-pivoted on fan reaction. Then people were like, it's too much fan service. We need to develop Mandalorian story a bit more independently. So we got the third season, which is the boring Mandalorian world building season that no one really cares about. So then we're taking the feedback. Okay, we've got to get back to the kid stuff again. And that's why we get this movie. But the result is we have a movie that's just kind of thin on everything that grounded the Mandalorian in the first season. The first season of the show, I don't think was as violent as the movie was, but it was a real like family adventure time romp, and that tone just kind of got lost in the movie. I didn't like almost anything in terms of the characters or the story. I think there were some really cool things about the movie, but there were like individual choices that I really liked. I thought the story was weak and boring and hard to follow. I thought Jeremy Allen White was tragically miscast.
Al, you just don't know what it's like to live in Jabba's shadow. I'm just trying to be a good person. And I'm going to tell you this five more times before the end of the movie.
That's a really good impression, except that you have to do an audio effect on your voice so that it becomes basically unrecognizable. So immediately you have the question of like, you've stunt cast this Hurt character, Jeremy Allen White, who's great if you want the kind of hurt, masculine, tender guy, but he doesn't have the right voice, so you have to alter it. So why not just hire the guy with the right voice in the first place? One of many confusing questions I had about the movie. I'm going to stop there because I don't want this to be just an immediate. I'm going to drop the rest of my criticisms.
Dave Filoni's fault. I haven't seen enough.
I think it's largely Dave Filoni's fault.
I don't think so, honestly. So Jon Favreau is a really talented director.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He is.
That's not the problem here. If you look at Dave Filoni's stuff outside of like this stuff, he's really good with storytelling. He's really good, particularly animated stuff. He's really good with storytelling. Honestly, I think this is the fans' fault. I think that the fans and the rabid fans and all of the feedback and how angry and vocal and vociferous they are, it forces the hand of the creators. And this is where we get again into the business, because Kathleen Kennedy was good in some areas, but she started listening to the fans way too much and started kind of shifting the properties towards the fans. So, for example, the reason why The Rise of Skywalker is so bad was because of the outrage that people had in response to The Last Jedi. That's the reason why that film is so terrible and why they did all the things that they did. And that is them listening to the fans and reacting to the fans and giving the fans what they think that the fans want. And the fans get what they want, and then it's terrible. And so I think that that is part of the reason why Star Wars went down so hard. I think that's part of the reason why Kathleen Kennedy is out of the Star Wars kind of circle. And I'm hoping that they kind of get away from that and get back to just doing good storytelling, even though the prequel trilogy is not good storytelling outside of the third film. But nevertheless, the point is, like, they've been listening to the fans too much. And so I really put a lot of this on the fans. It's not one person. It is all of them listening to the fans, and Kathleen Kennedy at the head of it, listening to the fans and trying to give the fans what they want and say, hey, give the fans are upset about this. Make it so. And you get ham-fisted stuff, you know, and changing of directors when it comes to The Rise of Skywalker and like all this mess. And that's the reason why I think things kind of need to be reset. And so going back to this film, I know what I was getting when I walked into it. Like I'm in the Star Wars circle. I'm a critic. I know the stuff that I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. But I put this squarely at the feet of fans, honestly, where we are with the Star Wars universe.
So I don't disagree. I'm just going to yes and you, Lawrence. I also think, too, that what makes Star Wars special is that they took a break for a while. We didn't see anything about Star Wars for a really long time. And then when it came back, I think audiences were really ready for it. We were really hungry for it. We didn't even know we were hungry for it. We wanted to show our kids this universe. And when you have something that is constantly on television, they're bringing out different forms of Star Wars stories, you know, different Star Wars stories all over the place, not only on screen. There were, you know, in the teens, there were definitely 20 teens, there were three, you know, movies right away with diminishing returns, quite honestly. But then at the same time, when it goes to TV, it makes it far less special. And so a movie like Mandalorian and Grogu almost doesn't have a chance to tell that story just because we've already seen it. It's not new to us anymore. And it hasn't been new to us in now more than a decade.
Spoken like a non-fan.
For me, it's less about the saturation, which is definitely there. I've heard a lot of people make this point of they're just doing too much and we just need to make a break. But then I remember the first time we had a long break, we got the prequels, which was, you know, there's a lot of prequel revisionism about now, but it makes me think that like just taking a break or just doing less isn't necessarily going to solve the problem.
Yeah,
but they've definitely cannibalized their own like movie market because the absolutely the correct advice for Chrissy to give about this movie is just wait and see it on when it comes to stream on Disney Plus, unless your kids are bugging you to go and see it. Just wait. It's perfectly fine to watch on TV, and it'll probably be, give you a perfectly good like couple of hours, but there's nothing about the movie that means that you need to see it now or that you need to see it on a big screen. Mm-hmm. I've heard the theory that this was originally a season 4 story that got adapted to be a movie. Having seen it, that seems really plausible to me. What do you all think? Because there is a real question of like, why is this a movie?
Mm-hmm. Relatedly, I was fooled. The first Star Wars film that I took my son to was the Clone Wars film, was two cartoons, two episodes of the cartoon put back to back. And like that was which introduced baby Jabba's son. So that's what that's
he's in the
picture from the cartoon.
And it's also a terrible movie. It's also a really bad movie.
It was fine, but
that one was not fine.
What I wanted. But yeah, I felt duped. I gotta defend this film as a spectacle. Like I thought that's what it was.
I completely agree. It is a spectacle. Like,
and I wanna see it on the bigger screen. I kinda wanna go out and see it again.
I agree with you. We're underselling the destroying of the Hutt Palace or whatever that was and all the TIE fighters. That is a spectacle. The
stop motion robots are incredible.
That's not really a spectacle. But yes, that and then like the that's escape a spectacle from
if you
that,
like stop motion.
That's what occurred to me first was these giant goddamn robots.
It's just like it's huge. I mean I think you guys are underselling because we're so accustomed to watching things on screens that you miss the spectacle of television. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see the spectacle of movies. And like, they put a lot of money into giving us the visuals that you would expect from Star Wars. Now, yes, there's some small stuff happening, but they give us a lot of spectacle on the screen. And I really enjoyed it in IMAX every single time I saw it. I can't take it back from it.
Sarah called the movie watered down. And I think that's really accurate. And your point, Lawrence, about the special effects really, I think, speaks to that. Because there are a few sequences where, yeah, the special effects are great. Although, like, the action never really rises to the level of, like, great family action. But there's some sequences which look really good on film. But it's not an action film. They haven't focused on making it a great action-adventure movie. And it's also not, like, a wacky comedy movie. They haven't really focused on that. This is, I think, fuels that the theory provides evidence for the theory that it was originally a TV story that they adapted for a movie. Because it doesn't have the kind of clear tone or structure that you would expect from a blockbuster Star Wars movie in any of the kind of main genres that they work in. It's got, as you said, Lawrence, like four things stitched together. So I would be more enthusiastic about going to see this in the cinema if it were like an action spectacular film, but it's just a few hours of Mandalorian storytelling with some actions. It's got about the amount of action in it that you would expect to see from three episodes of TV.
And there's also just the Mandalorian himself is kind of a boring character.
Oh,
like there's really nothing, you know what I mean? There's no change there. There's no character arc. And good God, we've got Pedro Pascal and we see his face for like 3 minutes. That's not fair. It just seems like for a big cinematic character, the Mandalorian isn't it for me. Do you guys agree with that?
Absolutely. And it's another baffling choice in this movie, because in the TV show, Mando works as a character because he's always got a sassy, usually woman sidekick next to him, mm-hmm. who can actually provide some, you know, emotional depth and give him something to contrast with. But all he has to emote with in the movie is Grogu.
Well, what about, we had concept art Chewbacca. That was his friend. What's yeah. the name of that character from Rebels?
From Rebels, I forgot what his name was.
Anyway,
he's a famous.
But that's his origin. Is if you look at what the concept art by Ricori for Chewbacca before they actually made the costume is that's what he was.
Oh really? I didn't know that.
It's an ultimate fan service thing.
So yeah, I don't know why. Like you've got Sigourney Weaver's right there, but also you know we got Katie Sackhoff was great, and the you know cancelled lady got cancelled and is now doing bad at wrestling. But you could write another good character. I don't know why they didn't.
So I liked when there was a constant stream on Disney Plus and in the theaters of Star Wars stuff. I'm a fan I want just throw shit at the wall. I liked the Solo movie. I don't care if it like underperformed box office expectations.
I did enjoy the Solo movie.
I thought it was had a lot of
I didn't, but I'm glad that they did it, you know? Just like as you say, Mark, just throw stuff at the wall. The problem is they keep flogging the dead horses.
Well, I mean, I liked the Obi-Wan series. I haven't watched it again, but I liked the whole you know, what is he doing for his job while he's waiting around? Like, that's the kind of stuff. Like, showing the meat butchering truck or whatever. And showing these aliens. I'm more annoyed. I shared this screen rant thing that was just a list of all the stuff that was promised to us that we never got made. Like, the Mos Eisley spaceport movie. Like, I want a TV show in the damn cantina. I bought for my
I want a Broadway son. I would have a Broadway musical of the based in the Mos Eisley cantina.
So essentially Cheers but in space is what that would be.
Yeah, I have been well served by the fan service that they put as many hammerheads in the various projects, right? In that Boba Fett series, there was like a hammerhead and he talks through the something on around his neck because, you know, how are you going to talk with your little fluttery hammer? You don't have a mouth. And there's a hammerhead Jedi in the Clone Wars. And oh, we want to get to know the sand people better. So like, I am the fans who are being served, seeing Luke unveiled in his CGI glory at the end of season 2 of Mandalorian. Yeah. I thought that was
wonderful. I did enjoy that.
Yeah, I love those dark troopers that he was fighting. I had no notes.
I just want to talk about that very briefly, because that was the point when the series really got over its skis for me. Because all of the fan service bits during the second season, I got really excited. I was like, oh my God, is that Boba Fett? And then Luke turned up and I actually thought to myself, I said out loud, oh my God, is that Obi-Wan Kenobi? And then I thought to myself, no, because he's dead by this point in the thing. But that's interesting context, because the reason I thought it was Obi-Wan Kenobi was because I immediately thought, because they could feasibly have got Ewan McGregor to come in and do Obi-Wan Kenobi. What I didn't think is that they would get, you know, Mark Hamill to come in with his scraggly old face, or that they do what they inevitably did, which is just have this really spooky CGI Luke Skywalker. And it's just so awkward and off-putting. Like, I just didn't like, why not recast? Just recast it. Just recast him. Or just have him not be on
screen.
But
see, I want to recast it because I want a Luke series. I feel like, you know.
What a great way to warm that up. Like, show us.
We wanted all that stuff right after the Return of the Jedi that we never got, because George Lucas was like, I'm just doing other stuff. Like, we don't care about your Howard the Duck movie. Make more Star Wars.
Do you know who might have been a good latter day Luke Skywalker if you didn't use him up as a stupid CGI character? Jeremy Allen White. Wouldn't that be nice?
I had not thought of that. You're a little short for a stormtrooper. Yep. Yeah.
You guys do realize that all the stuff you're suggesting...
I just want to stunt cast Star Wars things.
Would cause the fans to riot. And to recast Luke Skywalker, they would...
There's been widespread approval for Sebastian Stan as a young Luke Skywalker.
You were just saying, Lawrence, correctly, that Star Wars execs need to stop listening to the fans. So apart from us, they should listen to these ones.
And the fake Harrison Ford, the young guy... I thought he was great. I thought his voice was great.
He was good. Solo just got a really bad rap, and I hope people are re-watching that, because there's a lot of good stuff in there, particularly what Donald Glover does as Lando. Like, there's a lot of good stuff in it. I hardcore disagree with you, Mark. I mean, I'm trying not to get into the business of this, but the previous CEO of Disney was Bob Chapek, and he was the CEO from 2020 to 2022. And he ruined Marvel and he ruined Star Wars by putting all these, like, oversaturating the market with these television shows. Like, all the bad television shows and all the bad movies that came out from Marvel and Star Wars are under his watch. And we're like, just now getting out from under him. And that's the reason why Bob Iger came back. And now they're in the hands of a new CEO, Josh D'Amaro. Anyway, that's a lot of business stuff. You guys aren't here for that. But the bottom line is, the reason why Star Wars went so downhill was because of that guy. And because of him saying, people are at home, they need something to watch, let's oversaturate the market with all these random TV shows that are not good. Captain America and the Winter Soldier, that television show. Or I think it might have been named something different. Anyway, Secret Invasions, that television show. The Obi-Wan show, terrible. Like all these things that they kind of just put together and put out there. And so we're just now coming out of that. And so The Mandalorian is one of the good things that happened, but it was not really him who greenlit it. Anyway, and so we're kind of getting out of the shadow of Kathleen Kennedy, kind of getting out of the shadow still of Bob Chapek. And so that's why I'm saying next year, like literally a year from now, there will be a new Star Wars movie with Ryan Gosling. And I'm hoping that that will reset things and kind of make things go. Now, I'm happy to be in the universe. I love Star Wars universe. I love the storytelling. I read the High Republic books. That is some of the best storytelling that's been out there. I like that. But I do understand that this movie was not great. And so I don't know, man. Like, it feels really weird for me to, like, defend it, because I do want to defend it like Mark does. Well, I also know, on the other hand, that it's not a really good film, that is very episodic, that is very much a TV show kind of strung together and put on the big screen with more special effects and more money. So, I mean, I hear what you guys are saying, but I'm not really ready to say that we need to kind of recast everything in Star Wars. I'm not ready to say that we need to do all these Mos Eisley television shows, Cheers in Space, all the other kind of stuff. I want to get back to, like, good storytelling. Mm-hmm. Like, just good. And if you're going to do a television show, do it like Maul or something like that. But do good storytelling.
So this is the thing. This is what I was trying to transition to, is because they said no more of that. You don't even get Acolyte season two, which I was not super excited by the Acolyte, but it was okay. And I wanted to see. I was very excited by the fan service. The fan service. What's the Darth Sidious's trainer that they
about. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Plagueis.
Yeah, Darth Plagueis. I want to see the young Emperor. Series, whatever, if this happens. But they said, well, okay, some people, if they really like Star Wars, we'll just give them this constant stream of cartoons. And so I've had sort of been worn down. I was never excited about the Clone Wars. I really like the, well, it's not even Star Wars, but the dopey, what is it, MTV, like before the Clone Wars cartoon, there was a different Clone Wars cartoon that's just a ridiculous anime. Like, I'm going to kill a million robots. That was is just really over the top. Yeah, once they did the formal Clone Wars cartoon and all the stuff that grew off of that, and the we're going to use different animators for these tales of the...
Talk about the Visions?
So yes, Star Visions. Wars Visions. I'm not that super excited about any of that.
Those are really good. Those are really good. Those are really good one-off stories.
I know Lawrence is a fan of this. And so I did watch the Darth Maul TV show. You know, I've always thought he was a cool character, and I'm so impressed at this point by where the animation has gotten to, right? That if it wasn't for the humans, like if you're just showing backgrounds and monsters and droids, they look exactly like they do in the movie. Like they don't look animated at all. And just so it's kind of creepy to me. And even like the background, the lighting is just so good, but I still didn't actually like it as a story. As storytelling, as a performance, the character of Darth Maul. Oh, I'm so sinister. I was not cool enough for me. Anyway,
I was lukewarm on Maul, but I think that's on me. I want to give it another go. But what has worked in Star Wars over the last few years has been these little chunks, like these one seasons. Andor was fantastic. That was first season was great. It could have ended there. They squeezed another season out, but it was good because it ended quickly. Mandalorian TV show. Like that first season, great. Obviously, they didn't know for sure they were going to do another one. The second one should have been the end. It was telegraphing to hell that was going to be the end of the story. But I think there would be an awful... like an Obi-Wan, fine idea. Obviously, the Acolyte probably, again, would have been better if they hadn't been gunning on it being a longer-term thing. I really love these short TV miniseries format. I think it serves Star Wars... the expanded universe extremely well. Like that's how you could do the Thrawn story and have it work. If we want that story to get told properly, same with Plagueis and all the rest of them, they're never going to be able to do that in a movie, because you're never going to be able to make a Thrawn movie that's actually going to make Thrawn fans happy, but Disney's going to put into a movie theater. TV show is absolutely the way to do that. So yeah, I think the lesson of stop making TV shows is the wrong one, because TV is where Star Wars has done its best work since the original movies, in my view.
Has it also been the place, though, where they've splintered their audiences?
Yeah.
So now you have your, you know, you have Andor, which is really for adults. That's not for kids. You've got Mandalorian, which is really for kids, not really for adults, or whatever, or stuff that's for fan, you know, big fans.
Fans and everyone is the real thing that they can't get right.
Yeah. That's it. That's exactly it. Because I am the normie here. I am somebody who's, I wasn't going to go and watch The Mandalorian and Grogu on my own if it wasn't an assignment, right? But I am going to go see the Ryan Gosling one next year, because it is going to be more of, as you said, Lawrence, a reset. That's a reset. And what they're doing is they're trying to attract that one big audience, the monoculture type of movie that everybody has to go see. We had a Backrooms open this weekend. You know who fucking saw that movie? This person right here. I can't believe I saw that movie, but I wanted to be part of the conversation. I didn't care about Mandalorian and Grogu before seeing this movie. It wasn't really part of the cultural conversation in the same way. And that's what I feel is missing these days in the Star Wars universe.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. I don't know if you can do that anymore. It's just things have changed so significantly.
Do you mean in this with Star Wars, Lawrence? Or
with just period. I mean,
you don't think Project Hail Mary?
I mean, honestly, like, so you can make movies that make a lot of money. And if you're a YouTuber, like, I saw Obsession for like the third time yesterday, and I saw Backrooms twice. I saw it earlier than I saw with the normies. If you're that kind of person, then you can make movies and make, you know, mainstream things where everyone's kind of talking about it for maybe a week or two. Or if you're Michael Jackson, you can make a movie and, you know, everyone will talk about it for a while. But like, I just don't know if Star Wars or really anything is really able to capture the monoculture the way that it used to. Star Wars, Marvel, whatever. Like, Marvel Doomsday is going to come out here soon, and that's not going to capture the monoculture the way that Infinity War did. I just don't know if you can do that. And so them going to television shows and doing small little one-offs, because I completely agree with Al on this point, that I think, like, stuff like Star Wars Tales of the Jedi, that's a little mini-series about Ahsoka, or Star Wars Tales of the Underworld, that's like a mini-series about the underworld of Star Wars and the gangsters and whatnot. I think that does a really good job. And so I would welcome a Star Wars kind of mini episode series, 15 minutes of four episodes about Thrawn, because I think Thrawn is a very interesting character and a wonderful person to kind of dig into. I think that it works for Maul, but you have to understand who Maul is, because Maul was a person who was killed, but then he developed a deep distaste for Empire, and he became a gangster, and this is all told in
after he died,
and this is all told in the animated series and Clone Wars and then Rebels. Like, that kind of fleshes out Maul a little bit, so you kind of have to understand that part of it. But I don't think that a person who doesn't know that would be able to kind of watch that show and really appreciate it. Bottom line is this: I think that Star Wars is going to try to recapture the monoculture. We'll see if they can do it next year. But I don't think that Mando and Grogu was an attempt to do that. It was an attempt to kind of do something that the kids would enjoy, maybe the adults would enjoy, but it was not an attempt to kind of reclaim that monoculture. They're going to try that next year. So I just don't know if anything can do that, really. Like I just don't. Because even though Backrooms is such a huge success, it's not really capturing the monoculture. Not really. Not everybody's talking about it. There are plenty of people who don't care about that. There are many people who don't care about Obsession. So I just don't know if you're ever really able to capture the monoculture the way that things once were. Like the days of Miami Vice and everybody watching it together and talking about it week to week, those days are gone.
Yeah, I think we can. The shape just looks a bit different. We have the viral event movie now, like Barbie a couple of years ago, or the Minions movie, or
the, what's the new Spielberg? Is that
Disclosure Day?
Is that an event?
Is that a memed movie, or will it just be successful?
Well, it's a really good movie, first of all. I'm going to tell you now, that is a great movie. Legitimately great. I'm really happy to see Spielberg go back to that.
Screenplay by David Koepp. We're going back to the original.
That's Jurassic Park.
Yeah, Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Mm. But they've also done a lot of different stuff together. But that's going to be like, listener, listen to me on that one. That's a good movie. Like, I'm watch that movie. It's really well done. Anyway, but I don't know, man. I don't know, because yes, Barbie was a sensation Outside of that, like, what other monoculture things have happened, really, in the past 5 years?
I think putting Ryan Gosling in your Star Wars reboot movie is a real good pump for it. The point stands that, like, what they've been trying to do simultaneously since The Force Awakens is keep fans happy and keep that big audience thing going. Disney really can't do anything other than that because they bought Star Wars for $1 billion. So you need to get $1 billion worth of stuff out of your Star Wars. And they keep making hugely costly financial decisions that don't bear fruit. So you've got to keep trying to recoup your losses. But yeah, the Ryan Gosling clearly has a claim to be the most bankable star in the world right now. Like, him in your Star Wars reboot is a really strong play for the big thing. But what they absolutely should not try and do is make it any kind of Star Wars nostalgia bait. It should very clearly telegraph to the fans, like, this is not for you. All of the many TV shows that we've been making over the last 10 years have been for you, and you didn't like them. This is a new thing, and we're going to try and make people like Star Wars again for the first time, because that's really what the show needs to do, or what the franchise needs to do.
Here's a proposal that, like, sorry to bother you. So having the Black Stormtrooper, who, like, I'm taking off my helmet, I'm a person. That was
Finn.
Cool.
His name is Finn.
But I think there is a thing, like, why do all the Stormtroopers in the original Star Wars movie have the same voice? It's because there's some, like, thing built into their helmets that, that makes them have this voice. So having it, I don't even think they made a thing about it with Poe of, like, now I get to do my black voice, you know, whereas when I had my helmet on, then it reduced everything to a white monoculture voice.
Isn't that because they were clones, or that I never quite understood how the
clones
were?
No, they're not clones.
They're not clones.
Because obviously they're not all clones because we saw Finn. It's
anyway, a Boots Riley Star Wars show is what I'm wanting.
That's why they all do the Wilhelm scream. That's terrible. when they fall off the side.
This was the thing that was done with the TV shows, more so with Marvel, but they gestured toward it with Star Wars. We're going to let a lot of. Yeah, isn't that kind of what The Acolyte was? There was black filmmakers involved, and we want to, but it's not as hard as the black superhero who's on the streets of New York.
Luke Cage.
Yeah. So we're going to make a super, I don't remember anything at this point. Anyway, we're going to make a feminist one, and we're going to make, so I kind of like that, but it's just, is Star Wars the place to do that? I'm not sure why not, but they tried it and it didn't catch on.
I mean, I think it can work because Star Wars is really an expansive universe. Mm-hmm. So you could have Godfather-like stories in the Star Wars universe because all the gangster stuff. I mean, so you could do it, but it has to be done well. And that is oftentimes where they fall down, because they oftentimes will let creators do certain things. And also, The Acolyte was a feminist filmmaker. She was a white filmmaker, white woman. But anyway, the idea is that they'll let people get started, but then they'll give them all kinds of notes because of how important their property is. They oftentimes have good ideas. And the one time they let a guy kind of run wild with it was The Last Jedi. And they got into a lot of trouble because the fans were very upset. And so that's the reason why they have kind of gone the route that they've gone. They'll let creators do a little bit, but then they'll note them to death and say, you have to do these other kind of things. And that's what oftentimes happens, and why, you get the Star Wars stuff that you've gotten is because they're always meddling with the property.
Well, and I know Colin Trevorrow is actually a kind of a schlocky generic filmmaker in terms of these Jurassic things that he made. But I still, when I read about what his, episode 9 was going to be, I'm way more excited about that. Of a Force ghost Luke following Kylo Ren around, and a lot of time spent on Coruscant. But I guess we always like the things that we don't get, if we got to see that Batgirl movie or whatever, then we'd be like, oh yeah, okay, this does suck.
Another thing that clearly didn't get noted to death recently was Andor, and I learned an interesting thing about how that was developed that I didn't know, which is that the writer Tony Gilroy didn't want to make a Star Wars thing. He was pitching around a sci-fi dystopian political drama. And then Disney was like, hey, do you want to make that Star Wars? And that clearly worked. And maybe that is a kind of secret formula that Star Wars is uniquely well positioned. Because there must be dozens, hundreds of writers who are pitching really fantastic genre fiction pieces that are fantasy or Western or sci-fi that could all find a place in the Star Wars universe, and then suddenly you have a reason to make these things. And Star Wars has like stories that are presumably interesting in their own right. Where they kind of get into trouble a lot of the time is picking, I talked about this in our Andor episode, but they pick an area of Star Wars canon history that they haven't told a story about yet, and then have to try and find a way to make that interesting. But it's much, much easier to make a good movie if you start from a story worth telling rather than starting from like, yeah, a set of a characters in a setting that you have to find a story in.
I mean, I want to make a Hammerhead therapy group movie, but I don't want it to be Star Wars. I just, it's just an independently brilliant idea. That's all. Yeah, I feel like you didn't take the bait with me, Lawrence, about the cartoons. Like, I think the thing, Star Wars characters either need to just shut up and be action, which made me actually like The Mandalorian and Grogu just fine, or they need to have like Mrs. Maisel. We need snappy dialogue. I don't want dumb dialogue. I don't want people undergoing emotional issues where it's written like an after school special. And that is what I feel like, even those later episodes of the Clone Wars and Ahsoka's being kicked out of the Jedi Order and she's meeting her new friends. Will she let her new friends down? Like, it seems like it's condescending.
Yeah.
The fact that you're disgracing the Star Wars scrolling, you know, the iconic thing to like have some cliche, like, don't count your chickens before they hatch. You know, whatever. It's not. Okay,
so you're talking about the format of the Clone Wars?
Yes. You're shitting on that? I'm shitting on. It's why I just still it's do fine. Not enjoy even the best ones. Even the Maul. I think Maul. And I was also kind of interested in the one from last year about Ventress. Mm-hmm. But I hadn't seen what happened to her in the Clone Wars. So I was sort of like, I can't continue this. I need to go back because I want to hear the whole story.
Yeah.
But it's just, I feel like, you know, if somebody tells you, oh yeah, Darth Maul had four legs for a while and was crazy, imagining that is better than how they actually depicted that in the Clone Wars cartoon. I was underwhelmed.
Hard disagree. I mean, I really don't want to get into direction. We're just going to go back and forth about this. I mean, I think that the animated series Rebels is great. The Clone Wars.
Rebels is great.
Towards the latter part of the Clone Wars,
I feel warmer toward Rebels. Let me say that
the Bad Batch is honestly a good show as well, although that's a action kind of military thing in the Star Wars universe. But those are acquired tastes. I will admit that those are acquired tastes. Those are not going to be for everybody. Those are for hardcore sci-fi Star Wars people. I would never say to Sarah, "Hey, Sarah, check out." Well, honestly, there may be an episode in the Star Wars Clone Wars. I might say check it out, but I would never say watch an entire season of it.
You like anime too, right, Lawrence?
No, I don't. My sons do. I don't like anime.
Oh, okay. Because I feel like that's a similarly acquired taste.
It is.
It is. I just don't want to run around watching these. Like, there's very few animes that I actually want to.
I can't get into it.
I could read the manga
and the acting style,
but it's the delivery of the dialogue.
I agree.
So that is something comparable to that is what I feel about the Clone Wars. Not that it's annoying.
It is. It is an acquired taste. The start of the Clone Wars is kind of disastrous. It's not good at all, but they really do a good job of turning it into episodic storytelling. And like, so there's oftentimes like a 3-episode arc in that. And so I would advocate for anyone who likes really good sci-fi telling. If you can get over the animation, it is quite good. And it does a good job of expanding the universe and looking at different kinds of things and like the Night Sisters and Star Wars magic that's not the Force and all that other kind of stuff. But if you don't want to go into that, then it can be kind of dicey, you know, watching that television show. So I just disagree with you on that, Mark, but I don't want to go too deep into that because I've already lost Sarah and I'm trying to bring her back to the conversation.
Well, and you said just to be even more alienating, you said you were getting into the novels, which I went through a little period when I was sort of, you know, around when episode 3 came, you know, where I was actually reading Star Wars novels, you know, before the Disney takeover. And I knew that these were bad.
Yeah, I've never read those.
But it was, I could get through. But like, I've reached a point where I tried the first one, and I just like
The Light of the Force.
Okay, what am I? I don't even know which one it was. And it was an audiobook. I was just like, what am I doing here? Like, I'm not. So I'm not in the mode. I guess you just got to get in a certain.
honestly, those books are quite good and they do really good storytelling. Like, they have really good writers on those books. The only books that I read from the era that you're talking about there, Mark, is the Thrawn book. There was like a series of books and I read those. They weren't very well written, but they expanded Thrawn for me.
Are you a fan of those, Al? Is that what you were talking about with the Thrawn?
Yeah, story? So the Thrawn trilogy, that's the Star Wars Expanded Universe. They're the novels that I've read a long time ago. But there are really terrific bits of Star Wars Expanded Universe, but they are only here and there, and hardly any of them are movies, which is kind of notable. I was a huge fan of the Darth Vader comic book, which was far better than it had any right to be.
That was really good, yeah.
But it's really odd with Star Wars, because they do just have so much of it, and you can't say, oh, the novels are great. None of it's of a consistent standard, I guess, is the point. No media, because some of the video games are some of the best video games ever made. Some of the movies are some of the best movies ever made. Some of the TV shows are some of the best TV shows ever made. But like most of it, most of the iceberg in any medium is not great.
I will give a shout out to the Dark Horse Clone Wars comics. So this is before the Disney takeover. And
they're kind of
harsh. But it also takes like, hey, remember that little snake Jedi that was sitting around the table in episode one? We're going to have a whole plot with him in it. And he's going to be fighting. He's going to be jumping around. They were sort of good war comics.
To get back to the recent movie, because that's the traditional way that you keep a fan base alive. And Star Wars has been doing that very well for a really, really long time. Like, you have the novels and you have the comic books and the spin-offs and maybe the odd like cartoon here and there. And that services the fans and keeps everyone's interest alive. And then you can show your kids the new movies when they come out. But they have got themselves into this muddle where they're constantly trying to do both things at once, because you can't make a $1 billion return on like Thrawn Expanded Universe novels and quite interesting independent comics.
All right. Well, I would love to, if we paid Sarah enough to do this, to have her read whatever we think is the best Star Wars novel and to see if she would think like that it actually has any literary merit whatsoever.
I think she has to play the BioWare Knights of the Old Republic video game.
Even more in her wheelhouse.
And she has to 100% it. I want every achievement.
Absolutely not.
I
never even did that. I mean, but one thing you said, Mark, not Mark, but Al is right, man. Those Star Wars games, some of them are quite good. Like, so the Jedi books, the Fallen Jedi book, games, both of those are good. I'm looking forward to part three. There's a Star Wars game. It's now escaping me. It's one of my favorite games of all time.
Outlaws or something? Is that
Outlaws? That's the one.
Outlaws. Yeah,
it's quite good. Like, they're doing really good, interesting stuff. It's just they can't do everything, and they need to kind of scale back a little bit. I think they've oversaturated the market. They need to scale back a little bit and make more consistent, good stuff. They do that because the books are good right now. The games are good. Television shows are kind of all over the place. The movies are kind of all over the place. It seems like they're going to start scaling back a little bit and making sure that what they put out is high quality. They do that, they'll be back to doing things the right way. But we'll see.
All of this talk about Star Wars books and manga and video games is making me feel like I need to go outside and play.
Go and do your homework.
Well, I was pleasantly surprised, given that the new movie was based on deep in the lore, like that fake Chewbacca that's from the Rebels cartoon. Are they going to bring...
His name is Zeb. That's Zeb. His name.
Okay. Are they going to bring back random things from the series that maybe you don't even remember? I started was watching some movies to prep and like, oh yeah, that the bad guy from Breaking Bad is for sure, even though you thought he died in season three, he's for sure going to come back. No, they didn't do any of that. Like, you only had to know who Jabba the Hutt was. Like, there was nothing else you had to know about this. I was pleasantly surprised that it was not so up its own ass.
I agree.
That somebody like Sarah could still get what there was to get out.
Could understand what was going on. That's true.
Yeah, that's true as far as it goes. But then if you think back to the first season of The Mandalorian, what was great about it was so unpretentious and just comfortable with what it was. Mm-hmm. And you had Giancarlo Esposito as a villain on screen. You only need to, just exactly the same way, you only need to have Darth Vader or Kylo Ren on screen for 3 seconds before you know everything you need to know about who they are and the kind of villain they are. Like, Giancarlo Esposito is in that class. I don't think we've heaped enough praise on like certain especially the characters in the Mandalorian show and like the ones that made it into the movie too. And it's part of the reason why the movie is so disappointing, because there were these moments of real brilliance, like Werner Herzog. Oh my God. We have to mention Werner Herzog, other than Grogu, by far the best appearance in that first series. My favorite bit of trivia that I learned about the Mandalorian TV show is that Werner Herzog is responsible for Grogu being as successful as he is, because the original plan was that they were going to have him be CGI and the puppet was just there as a stand-in for when there were dialogue scenes and they just needed the back of the head. And Werner Herzog was doing a scene with him, and then Jon Favreau said, okay, we're going to cut and get a clean one for the CGI take. And Werner Herzog was like, what are you talking about? And the quote is, apparently he said, you cowards, this thing is beautiful, talking about the puppet. And, you know, he's obviously correct because it's Werner Herzog. And I loved, what's her face? Who played the mechanic, Amy?
Sedaris.
Sedaris, also fantastic. And Michael, filmmaker guy, only in the movie, but doing that incredible voice role.
Scorsese? Are you talking
Scorsese? Martin Scorsese, yeah. Martin Scorsese, dude, like being the best voice actor in the movie.
I didn't actually like that, I gotta say.
No?
I loved it. And the cartoon characters, like, they didn't give Zeb much to do. I didn't like him that much. I mean, he looks cool. And that character, and when Jon Favreau himself in the Solo movie did, like, I'm the monkey with four arms who's the pilot or whatever. Like, I don't buy that. Like, it did not seem convincingly like a character to me. I was not thrilled with the direction of Scorsese. I mean, who doesn't want to just hear Scorsese do something like that? I mean, I just loved
hearing his voice in there. And the Jim Henson Chris's were mostly delightful, like through the movie and the TV show.
I will say, I read, you know, when I was reading those books, it was, I think, a Han Solo based book. There were a few, and it had Hutts beating the shit out of each other. And I was like, oh man, I wish I could see that on screen. And so, yay, we finally got to see Hutts beating the shit out of each other on screen. We can see Hutts with weapons. We can see Hutts just rolling over each other. Maybe they're having an orgy at some point. So, yeah,
that was one of several moments that I would describe as embarrassing from the movie.
I bet you didn't like when Yoda in episode 2 went all freaky deaky and started jumping around like a jumping bean. I mean,
it's interesting that's the place in the film. It's interesting that the jumping bean movement we know now from Grogu is a species thing, and no, it's not a martial artist choice that he's making, just like Yoda creatures all jump like that. Which is just another weird choice that Star Wars makes as a universe always, is that every detail has to be, it's not just that every detail is relevant, but every detail of every individual character stands in for the whole class of species or thing that they are. Like Boba Fett and the Mandalorian is the best case in point, because the original character was just like bounty hunter standing in the background, and they came up with quite a cool helmet for him, and now here we are later and there are two TV shows, a whole race of these aliens who are all bounty hunters, and none of them ever take their helmet off, and we're going to make like so much of the show about how obviously stupid and impractical that is as a rule. But here we are.
Right. Trying to make a universe out of a story has just been embarrassing from the start. Like if you read some of these extended universe things, oh, did you know that right before the second Death Star was blown up, that IG-88 had become a super intelligence and was creeping in and was taking, this is like a short story from the Tales from the Bounty Hunters book, that there's always just, oh, so many scenes going on, which, you know, is why the Cantina sitcom or whatever, I feel like would be a fun thing, because I mean, they don't all have to be doing stuff having to do with the Skywalkers and that particular, they could have their own things going on.
But that's another weird take of the Star Wars expanded universe, is that every story somehow has to be Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead instead of just
there you go.
Actually telling a different story.
There's a series of books that came out not that long ago. One was just made into a new Audible thing, From a Certain Point of View. So it's like 200 stories that are all sit alongside the first Star Wars movie, and then another crap load of stories to fit right along Empire Strikes Back. for instance, one of the guys who does My Brother and Me, a podcast I listen to, wrote one of the stories, and it's like about a Jawa who just wants a better life for himself. And he does something that ends up like, well, if he hadn't been there, then things wouldn't have turned out the way they did in Star Wars Episode 4. And so it's this kind of silly storytelling that
I'm really glad the McElroys are getting writing work, but that's a middle school writing assignment, not like professional media. Come on, let's get a grip.
I suppose. All right. Well, we'll have some non-Star Wars things to talk about for whoever can stick around for the after talk. Thanks for catching up with us. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
That is the way.
Pretty Much Pop is part of the Partially Examined Life podcast network. Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop.